Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 141 of the True Crime All the Time Unsolved podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, how are you?
I'm good, man. How about you?
I'm doing great.
Good.
You and I are recording this episode right before Thanksgiving.
We are.
So it will come out after Thanksgiving. So hopefully everybody had a good holiday for those of you that celebrate it. And if you didn't, hopefully you just spent some quality time with friends and family.
Yeah.
Had some nice food, some drink. We should be doing that all the time anyway.
Whatever you like the most, hope you did a lot of it.
Okay, that covers a pretty wide spectrum, though. You know, you could be talking to some serial killers out there for all we know.
Instead of two, they did three this week.
Yeah, hopefully not. So, Gibbs, we have some new Patreon supporters. Let's give some shout-outs. We had Martini Martin.
Hey, Martini.
Claire Reed.
Hey, Claire.
Meliza Weaver.
What's up, Meliza?
Genevieve O'Keefe.
Hey, Genevieve.
Grady O.
Grady O, what's up?
Kelly Martin Kim.
Hey, KMK.
George Blaskowski.
Blaskowski.
Ruthie Loffy.
Hey, what's up, Ruthie? Did I say Ruthie?
You said Ruthie? I did. Oh, that was a Freudian slip, I think, right there. We had Faith Barnett.
Hey, Faith.
Marie Munoz.
Hey, Marie.
Susan Lim.
What's up, Susan?
Casey Carter.
What's up, Casey?
Dana Baldock.
Hey, thanks, Baldock.
Allie.
What's going on, Allie?
Kelly Johnson.
Thanks, Kelly.
Jeff Grattan.
Oh, Jeff.
Miranda Hart.
Miranda.
Angela Shahata.
Ah, Shahata.
I just like saying that.
Yeah.
That's a fun name to say. Shaylin McAuliffe.
Ooh, McAuliffe.
Amber Breeding.
What's going on, Amber?
Dorothy Carver.
Thank you, Dorothy.
Becky Griffiths.
Hey, Becky.
And last but not least, Susan Hoffman.
What's going on, Susan?
Then if we go back into the vault, Gibbs. This week, we selected Crystal Elganian.
Yeah, thanks, Crystal.
Been with us a long time.
She's amazing.
And we appreciate that long-term support. We appreciate the new Patreon support as well. Just last week, we put out a brand new Patreon-only full-length episode.
We did.
On both video and audio. So, you know, I know the holidays are coming up. A lot of times, money gets tight. But it's a great time to sign up for Patreon because of the massive amount of content that's out there.
Yeah.
I think that was episode number 16.
And it makes a great stocking stuffer.
It does. I don't know how you put it in there, but
you just do.
There are a lot of people that buy. They donate, they subscribe to Patreon for others. So it does work. I don't know exactly how it works, but people do it. We had some PayPal support as well. Jenny Nicholas.
Hey, Jenny.
Kira Enright.
Our friend Kira.
Ted Perry.
Oh, our buddy Ted.
Yep. Kim Hester.
What's going on, Kimberly?
Breda Hale.
Hey, Breda.
And Jessica Metz.
Hey, thanks, Jessica.
So a lot of familiar names in there, but we appreciate all the support that we get. Gibbs, right now on True Crime All the Time, we have an episode out on Dr. Glennon Engelman.
Yeah, well, how interesting is that one?
DDS.
DDS, yeah.
So this is a dentist that moonlighted on the side as a hitman.
Yeah.
But more so than that, he essentially orchestrated and planned all of this, right? Got with these women, told them in some cases who to marry. Like, marry this guy. He's got a lot of life insurance. He's got great benefits. To later then kill this person so that he and the wife could split the insurance proceeds.
He was definitely into the planning.
Yeah, he was into the planning, and that's the thing about this guy. He's not a serial killer. He's a more of a hitman, murder-for-hire type person.
Right.
I don't think he was as much into murder as he was into kind of the entire process of planning and trying to commit a crime, get away with it, outsmart the cops, etc.
Definitely had a mythology behind him.
Yeah, he did. All right, buddy, are you ready to get into this episode of True Crime All Time Unsolved?
I am.
We're talking about the case of Bossier Doe. This was a Jane Doe down in Bossier Parish, Louisiana, an unidentified female that was later identified as Carol Ann Cole.
Yeah.
And I think I said this on TCAT, Gibbs. This is about as close to a solved case as an unsolved can get.
Pretty darn close.
So let's jump right in. It was on January 28th, 1981, in the Bossier Parish, in the city of Bellevue, Louisiana, that a white, or they thought at the time, possibly Native American female corpse, was found off Highway 157 in the woods by a local hunter. This local hunter was named John Chason. He had with him his two kids. The body was found in the tree line next to an oil pipeline. So Chason and his kids drove back home and they called the police.
Yeah.
Which is what you would expect anyone to do who found a dead body.
Be the first instinct. Hey, kids, get in the truck. We're going to go home. We got to make a phone call.
So police come out. The medical examiner comes out to the site. They estimated that the victim's age was somewhere between 16 and 20 years old. She had been stabbed 9 times, and a knife that was believed to be the murder weapon was found next to her.
Convenient.
So probably not too hard right. to at least theorize that this knife that is found right next to the body is most likely the murder weapon. The victim had on jeans with a leather belt, which had a buffalo nickel belt buckle.
Yeah, one of those big rodeo style belt buckles. I know you got a few.
Oh, sure.
You know. They don't have the buffalo on it.
I don't have the buffalo nickel on it, but I do have some pretty big belt buckles that I, back in the day, wore with my boots and Stetson hat.
Yeah.
When I did my country line dancing. I've talked about it before.
Yes. And you're probably going to go do it this weekend because you keep bringing it up. I think you missed it.
No, we haven't done it in a long time. My wife and I used to go country line dancing. I don't know that I'm in shape. It's quite a workout.
Is it?
Yes, it actually is. It doesn't sound like it would be, but it really is.
Speaking of that, I did see your Garth Brooks is coming out on another tour there. So we're releasing some pay-per-view thing. I know you'll be happy.
So you're really not sure. He's either on tour or he's releasing a pay-per-view thing.
Hey, there's some news about your Garth Brooks guy.
And you keep calling my Garth Brooks guy. So back to this buffalo nickel belt buckle. This is something pretty specific.
Yes.
Right? Something that you would think somebody would latch onto that is missing a 16 to 20 year old female.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of these type of belt buckles floating around, big old buffalo nickel head on it.
She was wearing a long sleeve shirt that was white with yellow, pink, and blue stripes. She also had on a tan sweater with a hood. The victim was wearing a white bra, white boxer underwear, white socks with yellow stripes.
I mean, it sounds like the typical clothing you would find back in that time frame. I mean, nothing's the rugby style shirt, the, you know, jeans, the socks with the, you know, different color stripe up on top. I mean, it's just what was fashionable back then.
Late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
She also was wearing size 7 leather gym shoes. And on the shoes, a name had been written, D. Davies. Her fingernails were freshly painted. She had blonde hair that was shoulder length. So again, we're laying out all of these details because all details are important when you're talking about a Jane Doe,
sure,
a missing person, an unidentified victim. As police began their investigation into her death, they determined that she had been stabbed and killed about 30 to 45 days prior to her body being found. Now, this is in Louisiana. So it's January, but it's still Louisiana.
It's still going to be warm.
Well, much warmer than it would be up north where we are.
Oh, absolutely, man.
Right? January in Ohio, a body is not going to decompose at near the rate that it would in January in Louisiana. There was heavy decomposition, which made identification very tough. They were able to determine that she was around 5'6", weighed about 130 to 140 pounds at the time of her death. The medical examiner wasn't even able to determine her eye color. So that tells you something.
It does.
They knew that she wore braces that had recently been removed. And they could tell this from the bonding residue that was still present on her teeth.
Yeah, I think it was almost like someone else took the braces off and not the orthodontist. Like somebody, either herself or somebody else, took those off and didn't do the final part where you actually buff down the teeth and get rid of all that residue.
So they theorized that it wasn't an orthodontist or a professional, possibly, that had done the removal. Because of the heavy decomposition, they had to try to reconstruct what the victim looked like using a three-dimensional clay model. And you can see the pictures. They're out there.
Oh, yeah.
They're kind of rough looking. And again, it may have just been the artist. It doesn't look anything like who this person ultimately was.
Exactly.
When they figure out who it was. Not trying to disparage the artist that did it. That's not easy.
No.
For me, I'm amazed that whether it's the modeling, the sketching, that they can get as close as they oftentimes do.
Yeah,
it amazes me.
And you're right. And you got to remember, this is 81.
Yes.
And the methods they use today are so much better. And we'll actually dive into that later into this episode. But to actually, back in 81, to try to do the clay thing around the skull and stuff, man, I don't even know how they come up with how they do that. How thick you go here, how thin you go here. I don't understand that.
Well, I think at some point you are making an educated guess at certain features.
Right.
Right. The skull can tell you so much, but from there, nose, mouth, you're having to make some type of educated guess.
Yeah.
So officials have some pretty good information. They get it out there in the press locally in hopes that someone will know who this person was.
Yeah, I mean, maybe someone's missing their girlfriend or their sister, their daughter, their granddaughter. Hopefully somebody's like, I haven't seen whoever. Is this her?
Well, and I think in the beginning, they theorized that this person was most likely local. Because I think you have to start there, right? You're not thinking right off the bat, okay, this is someone from another state. They traveled a long distance. But investigators followed up on all the leads they got, nothing really developed. And then as the years went by, this unsolved murder went cold. To make matters worse, Gibbs, some of the evidence that was recovered at the scene was lost during a fire.
Which has got to be devastating, right? For the cold case team, anybody involved in it, especially the family, if they knew who the family was, how devastating if they ever figure out who this victim is. Was the evidence lost going to impede them from moving to a trial?
So this fire took place in 2005 at the place where they were storing the evidence. So really, Gibbs, things are not looking promising in the Bossier Doe case. Then 10 more years went by after this fire. So it was 2015 until they finally got a big break in the case. It was the first week of February 2015 when cold case detective Lieutenant Shannon Mack got a little innovative, right? She was trying to figure out what she could do to help. What she did was she created a Facebook page, called it the Bossier Doe. She added some images to it. She added the belt buckle. But I think the biggest thing was that she added an image that had been generated by a computer program. So this is years later. They've got better technology. Yeah. This computer program used DNA technology to help render an image of what this person most likely looked like.
Better than the old clay.
Yeah, model. Much better. It's based on a little bit more science. They were able to take DNA from her teeth. And then the LSU, the Louisiana State University Faces Lab, used a digital method to render this image, and this was supposed to show what the Bossier Doe most likely looked like prior to her death. So Lieutenant Mack asked the Facebook community, and that's a big community.
It's a huge community.
There is a lot of people on Facebook, and there are a lot of true crime people.
There is.
Amateur detectives, amateur sleuths, people that are fascinated by some of these cases and are willing to spend some of their time looking into them, investigating. So she asked them, and every contact she had with other agencies to share the link. It was on March 5th, 2015, that the Bossier Parish Sheriff made a huge announcement to the public. They had made a positive identification of the Bossier Doe. Now, keep in mind, this was 34 years later.
Yes, a long time.
That this female was stabbed in the woods off Highway 157. It turned out that the victim was about as far south as she could have been from her original home in Kalamazoo, Michigan. That's a long ways.
There's a huge distance.
From Louisiana to Michigan, north to south, I mean, you can't go much farther.
No, that's about as far spread as you got.
This person had recently moved to San Antonio, Texas. Her name was Carol Ann Cole. She had been missing since December of 1980.
So that is a long time for a family to not know where their loved one is.
That's a very long time. 34, 35 years.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Gibbs, they get information. Imagine.
Oh.
You've been sitting around. Your life has changed dramatically because of this event. And then 34, 35 years later, somebody figures it out.
Yeah.
So let's take a step back and talk a little bit about Carol Ann Cole. Carol and her sister, Jenny Phelps, grew up in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Their parents divorced while they were young, and the girls ended up living with their grandmother. It was in January of 1980. Carol was only 16 years old when she left Kalamazoo to move away with her mother, Sue Cole, to San Antonio, Texas. Her sister Jenny remained with their grandmother. Carol stayed in contact with her sister when she could. I mean, the options were obviously much more limited back then.
Of course, yes.
You had phone calls, you could write letters. There was no picking up a phone and immediately texting back and forth.
No.
There was no FaceTime video. It was none of that.
None. Maybe.
There wasn't even email.
I'd say not even getting into the you've got mail.
No. Yeah. Not even email at that point. Now, Carol did have some issues. In early 1980, she had issues with drugs. She also had some issues with authority on the part of her mom.
Well, they kind of go hand in hand sometimes.
They can.
You know?
They can, for sure.
I don't want you doing that. You can't tell me I can't do that.
I mean, what 15, 16-year-old doesn't have some type of issue with authority?
Oh, for sure.
I know both of my girls have had it at different points in their life. I think most kids do.
Part of growing up.
Well, let's face it. Who wants to be told what to do?
I know I don't.
Nobody really does. Oh. So some people handle it better than others. It depends on your personality, all of that. But her mom sent her to live in a home for teen girls. This was called the Palmer Drug Abuse Program in Austin, Texas. This was in May of 1980. And while she was in this home, she did write and sometimes call her sister when she was allowed to. She had to earn that right.
Yeah, when you're in a home like that, you know, you have to do certain things to get that privilege.
It's a privilege, right? Yeah. On Carol's 17th birthday, this was November 5th, she left the home and moved in with a friend in Shreveport, Louisiana. So she stayed in touch with her sister up until the end of December 1980. The last time anyone in her family heard from Carol, she called from a house where she was babysitting. Her family back in Kalamazoo tried to get in touch with her after this. They called the house in Shreveport where she was staying. But every time they called, the person that answered said, you know what? She left for a party a while back and she never returned. So we just assume she moved on to somewhere else.
Yeah. We're not watching her, man. We don't know where she's at.
So I think at this point, Gibbs, her family back in Michigan is getting very worried. Her grandmother, her sister Jenny, even Jenny's best friend, a girl named Patty Thorington, they did their best to try to find Carol. But they're in Michigan.
It's going to be hard to do.
Very hard. There's no Find My iPhone app. There's no Google. I mean, again, I don't want to harp on it, but your resources are extremely limited, or were extremely limited back then compared to everything we have today.
Yeah.
I can tell where you are at pretty much every second of the day because of the malware that I installed on your phone.
Explains a lot now.
You know about it. You just don't know how to get it off.
I can't. I've tried. I'm too cheap to get a new phone. But you're right. I mean, they're going to have to make a lot of phone calls to a lot of different places to people that are going to not know anything about this.
Yeah, they don't have the answers that they're looking for. They might have a piece of information, but it's really not helping them out. It's, yeah, I last saw her X amount of time ago. I have no idea where she is now. They had some reports that she was staying at a group home. They had some reports that she was staying at a school for religious girls. A photo would later crop up. And in this photo, there's a girl that resembled Carol Ann Cole sitting with some other girls in a pew. It looks to be taken at maybe one of these religious schools. Carol's family eventually filed a missing persons report after they couldn't get in touch with her. But authorities never came up with any information on Carol Ann Cole. And even Gibbs, when the Bossier doe was found that day in the woods, Carol Ann Cole was not even considered to be a possibility. She just wasn't on the radar.
No.
So the years went by. We already said that Carol's family was devastated, but they never stopped looking for her. They never gave up. It was in February of 2015 that Jenny entered her sister Carol Ann Cole's information into the National System for Missing Persons, called NAMIS. I mean, the hope there was that there would be some type of lead generated.
Yeah, something that would kick out and say, hey, potential match.
Because it has been 34 years.
Yeah.
By the time she does this in 2015. And I mentioned they never stopped looking. Jenny and her friend Patty, they combed Facebook. Facebook is a huge thing by this point.
Right.
They combed Craigslist. They were looking for any lead. They kept putting info out there about Carol to keep awareness up, to get it out there that Carol's still missing.
Never gave up.
Never gave up. Patty even placed a missing persons ad on Craigslist.
Yeah.
Now, this is where things kind of merge back together. So we separated timelines there for a little bit. We talked about the detective that had formed a Facebook group centered around the Bossier doe case.
Right.
I mean, literally like a few days after she created this Facebook group, had 700 likes.
Which is a lot of people.
By the end of the week, over 1,000.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of people with eyes on this Facebook group. On February 6, 2015, a local 911 operator named Linda Erickson saw the page, the Bossier doe Facebook page. She saw the digital picture.
Right.
And she remembered seeing a picture on a missing persons ad on Craigslist, a real picture of Carol Ann Cole. And I think Gibbs, right away, she thought, these look extremely similar.
Oh, yeah.
And I know one of the big things that she said over the years that really stood out to her was the nose. Carol Ann Cole had a kind of a distinctive nose, really in the shape of her nostrils. You know, some people do. Some people have it where it arches up a little bit higher. And I think that's what she had. The digital image had that as well.
And thank goodness that it did.
And it really jumped out to her. So Linda called the cold case detective, told her what she had seen, told her that she thought there was something to this. On February 13th, the Bossier Sheriff Department emailed Patty for some additional information on Carol Ann Cole. She was the one that put the ad out there. They reached out to her. They traded information for a little while. And then eventually they got to the point where they said, okay, we think there's something here. We need to do some DNA testing.
Right.
And when the DNA testing was completed, it came back that the Bossier Doe was in fact Carol Ann Cole.
Not only did they have the DNA testing, but they also could confirm, you know, we talked about it, how Bossier Doe had the stuff on her teeth from removing her braces, and Carol Ann's sister was able to confirm that she recently removed her own braces while she was down at the drug rehab home.
So that's huge, right? You have the DNA, that's pretty definitive, but then you have Carol's sister adding this detail about the braces. It just kind of really puts it all together. And this takes us back to the big announcement on March 5th. Carol Ann's sister told the press that she was in shock that they had finally found Carol. She was very emotional. Now, she was relieved, but she was also very sad, Gibbs, at the same time. She flew to Louisiana to be at the press conference and also to help bring her sister's remains back home. Again, 34, 35 years has gone by.
But she's finally going to be able to bring her sister home and bury her.
Which is not an inexpensive thing to do. First of all, they have to get the remains from Louisiana back to Michigan. And then obviously there's the massive expense of a funeral. So the family started a GoFundMe page to cover the cost of getting Carol's remains home, the cost of the burial, the headstone, all of that. And you know, Gibbs, people step up, right? Our Patreon folks step up for us.
They do.
People in these types of situations, they will step up unbelievably to help out this type of family in need. And they did. Carol Ann was laid to rest, finally, after so many years, back home in the Maple Grove Cemetery in Comstock Township, Michigan. Her funeral was on June 18th, 2015. So that is the first part of this case, right? The Bossier Doe.
Yeah.
The search for who this person is. The ultimate reveal that it is Carol Ann Cole, originally from Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Right.
But I think now we have to transition and look at, okay, who killed Carol Ann Cole? We know who the victim is.
Well, now the detectives have some pieces to the puzzle.
Sure.
So that they can start weaving some things in and out to try to see if they can get to who the potential suspects are.
Well, and it's much easier. I shouldn't say easy. It's easier to investigate a case when you know who the victim is. If you don't know who the victim is, you don't know who their friends are. You don't know who their love interests are. You don't know any of that stuff. You don't know who to look at. But there are some possible suspects in this case. And we start with the man who found the body in 1981. We talked about John Chason was out hunting with his young son and daughter when they came across the body of Carol Ann Cole, what would later turn out to be Carol Ann Cole. Police interviewed him back then, and then they interviewed him again after the body was identified. And to me, Gibbs, John Chason is the person that I think most people believe was responsible for the death of Carol Ann Cole. Would you say that's correct?
Oh, I would.
I mean, his own daughter, who was with him that day when the body was found, is now an adult. She even thinks that he's most likely the person that killed Carol Ann.
I mean, her reasoning behind it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, her theory is that he set it up. He took her and her brother out hunting that day because he knew where Carol Ann's body was.
Right.
So he took them to that area. They happened to stumble, and I'm using air quotes for that word, on the body.
And to her, it was like he got them to the general area and kind of just let them walk around. Like, and she said he had that look on his face like, you're getting close. Like Easter, you know, when you're trying to find an Easter basket, you know?
And it makes sense because he doesn't want to find the body. That's going to put a lot of suspicion on him. But hey, I've got my two young kids with me.
Yeah.
We just stumbled upon it. One of the issues that his daughter has is he didn't take them on hunting trips.
No.
This wasn't like a regular thing.
Very unique.
It is. So, you know, again, having your children with you, it kind of creates this, I don't want to call it an alibi, but it creates a sense of, don't look at me. I'm just the person who happened to be with their kids, yeah, and we stumbled upon a body.
And how traumatizing it is for my kids to find that. I need to take care of them right now, but I'm glad you're out here to take care of the body.
His daughter told authorities that her father was an abusive person. She also remembered that he brought a young woman into their home that he had picked up in town, and she said she resembled Carol Ann Cole from her memory, right? This is a long time ago, but she's remembering these things. This was about a month before the discovery of the body. And we said, police believe that she was killed about a month or so before the body was found. He told the kids that she had been out hitchhiking. He stopped to help her out, brought her home.
Well, he's a nice guy, picking up a hitchhiker.
Yeah, he's helping her out.
Yeah, bring her back here.
Now, sadly, we really don't have much information from John's son because he took his own life in 2008. So we really don't have any details from him. But John Chason was pretty easy to locate. He was already in prison by the time that Beaujardot was identified. He was in prison for the murder of his estranged wife's mother. So his ex-mother-in-law?
Yeah.
Boy, he must have really not liked her.
I mean, there's some other laws out there, but I mean, come on, that's extreme. But clearly he's got
the capacity
to murder.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, when you're already in prison for murdering someone, not a leap, not a stretch to think that you could have potentially murdered this girl.
Sure.
We already know you're capable of it. They went and talked to John, but he really didn't provide any revelation. He essentially told investigators the exact same things he told them back when he was interviewed years ago. He didn't change anything. And he said he doesn't know why his daughter feels like it is that he had something to do with it, why it's any more than them being in the woods and finding a body.
So he's sticking to his story.
Yeah, very much so. The Shreveport Times reported that John's daughter remembered seeing the girl leaving her purse in their house, and she believes her dad did something with it. But I think the big thing, Gibbs, is that she remembers what that girl was wearing, and it was the same description of the clothes that Beaujardot was wearing the day she was found. That is huge. Now, we're relying on this woman's memory, but I don't see why she has any reason to lie about it. There's no reason.
She doesn't gain anything out of it. No.
And she's talking about her own father. You know, people don't run down their family because it reflects poorly on them.
Sure.
So I have to kind of assume she's telling the truth because I don't know what she has to gain. She's not going to be getting a bunch of money from her father. Nothing like that's going to happen.
I think she has had plenty of time to think about this.
Yep.
And when Carol Ann was identified, I think she was able to just put everything together and just wanted to make sure it got out there. And
well, because look at it this way. Even if she remembered this stuff back then,
right?
Who was she going to tell? There was nothing to tie. There was no person to tie it to.
Exactly.
But after 2015, there was Carol Ann Cole. I think she feels really bad.
Yeah.
That she believes her father murdered this young girl. And then used her and her brother to find the body. That's what I believe.
And the evidence looks pretty convincing to me. They find the body, her story about the way that he presented the search for the body, and then the fact that, you know, she remembers seeing all this stuff in the house and seeing her, the Beaujardot at the time, in her house previously.
So investigators know where this guy is. He's in prison, probably not getting out anytime soon, if he ever does. But they apparently have not been able to put together the evidence, Gibbs, to charge him with the murder of Carol Ann Cole, at least to this point. So you have to ask the question, Did he do it? And they're just not able to put together the evidence, or did he not do it? Or, I mean, we don't know the answer.
No, but we don't. You know, or do they wish that whatever did get lost in that fire in 2005, they wish they still had?
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up. That may be a major hurdle in them putting together the evidence against this guy, because let's face it, a lot of the evidence they had is gone. But there are other suspects we need to talk about. And the next one is Henry Lee Lucas.
There's a shocker.
Shocker. Pretty big name. I mean, the reason why you have to bring Henry Lee Lucas up is because he confessed to the murder.
Which he did a lot, right?
I was going to say, the problem with Henry Lee Lucas is he confessed to just about every murder he was aware of. I mean, hundreds. And some have been proven that he couldn't have possibly done them. I'm sure there were a lot, and we know there were a lot that he did.
Right.
I think Lucas was a guy that wanted to try to keep himself in the limelight. I also think he's a guy that wanted to pad his numbers. That sounds disgusting, but I honestly believe there are killers who get a thrill after they're convicted and incarcerated. What else can they do but talk to the media, talk to police, and say, hey, I got something else for you. I did this.
Yeah, they like to play that game.
Yes, because that's better than just sitting in prison and reading the same book for the 30th time. Well, Henry Lee Lucas wasn't probably reading too many books.
I don't think he was reading much, yeah.
And he sure wasn't brushing his teeth or flossing them, because he didn't have many. Dental hygiene was not a big part of his day in prison, I'm assuming. And really in the outside world, obviously.
When he was in the prison, he didn't take advantage of the free dental system?
No, not at all. I mean, just as an example, Lucas tried to take credit for the murder of Tammy Jo Alexander, the orange socks victim. I mean, these were just two that police later proved that he couldn't have done. The reason why people don't believe him, they don't believe his admission of guilt in killing Carol Ann Cole, is because he was seen in Florida at the time that her murder is thought to have been committed. So again, this guy was a prolific killer. There's no doubt about that. He didn't kill near as many people as he's claimed he killed.
Right.
And it's thought that there's no way that he killed Carol Ann Cole.
But I think it's one of those names that gets tossed around if you happen to be murdered in that time frame, right? In Texas, Louisiana, Florida.
And there's a reason. It's because he has said he's killed hundreds.
Right.
So how can you not at least take a look at Henry Lee Lucas when you have an unsolved murder? Like you said, time frame, geography, if it all even is close to lining up, you have to look at him.
Yeah, for sure.
So we discussed briefly that there was a picture of a girl that people believed was Carol Ann sitting with some other girls in a pew at a religious home for girls near Shreveport, Louisiana. The man who ran this home, and the home was called the New Bethany Home for Girls, was a guy by the name of Mack Ford. Mack Ford had allegations against him, Gibbs, for several counts of sexual abuse that occurred while this home was operating. It closed in 2001. Mack Ford never went to trial because the statute of limitations ran out by the time prosecutors wanted to do something with him.
Right.
And then he died in 2015. Now, I think you have to bring this guy up just because of the picture. The problem is it's never been confirmed that the girl in the picture is Carol Ann.
Right.
And I think most people don't believe that Carol Ann was ever at this New Bethany home. But like we always say, it's a branch. It's a rabbit hole. It's something you have to follow because it comes up when you're researching this case.
Yeah, I mean, it's just another disturbing piece of information.
And like you always say, it's just another bad guy.
Yeah.
That crops up when you're looking into a case.
It's like, yeah, maybe he could have had a hand in this, but doesn't look like it. But again, wasn't a good guy.
No, I'm sure he committed some atrocities against some of these girls at the home. They just couldn't prosecute him for them.
Right.
And there are some other suspects. Three in particular are James Thomley, Alan Gaskins, and Stephen Scott. So James Thomley and Alan Gaskins were 18-year-old boys who were found guilty of the kidnapping, rape, and murder of 14-year-old Virginia Smith of Shreveport, Louisiana. Stephen Scott was 22 years old. He was also found guilty in this same kidnapping, rape, and murder, but he testified for the prosecution. And because of that, he received 99 years versus life, which is what the two 18-year-olds got. 99 years? You couldn't strike a better deal than that?
Yeah, you think you get something better out of that deal.
So these three men, and I'll call them men, the two were 18, killed Virginia Smith on December 6, 1980, on a levee in Bossier Parish. This happened on a rural road. So they kidnapped her. They forced her to perform sexual acts on them at knife point. And then when they were done, Gibbs, they stabbed her to death.
Yeah.
Stabbed her in the back several times and then sliced her throat.
Vicious.
That's brutal. And then they just tossed her into the levee.
Just like trash. Somebody's little girl, they treat it like that.
That makes you sick.
It does make you sick.
So police were interested in these three guys, right? They wanted to talk to them. Well, by the time they did, Stephen Scott had been released, which is somewhat hard to believe. He got 99 years, but he must have been paroled.
Right.
But there's like no trail of him. Police don't even know where he is, so they can't find him to question him. One of the men died in prison, so there's one left. They went to talk to him in prison, and unfortunately, I don't know which one it is. But from the facts that they got, or at least the conversation they had with this guy, you know, the timing of everything just did not add up to any of them being involved in the murder of Carol Ann Colt.
But again, you're looking at one case and you stumble across some other. This is extremely brutal case.
Oh, it's horrific. Horrific. Now, there are some people that believe Carol Ann could have been killed by oil workers. You know, these guys that go out and work on the rigs.
Sure.
You know, working on the oil pipeline. And the reason why they say this is because the house that she stayed at in Shreveport was apparently across the street from a very busy convenience store where a lot of the oil workers stopped.
So it was a frequent spot for them.
It was. And there's a theory that maybe one of these workers convinced her to go with him, kidnapped her, murdered her.
Well, she was found by the oil pipeline.
She was. And I think that's why maybe some people gravitate towards that theory. And then you have the theory that involves the Texas killing fields.
Yeah.
You know, the location of Shreveport to that.
I mean, you're talking about 4 hours.
Brings in serial killers, Harold Bell and William Reese. These were two killers known to have operated in what is known as the killing fields. Harold Bell killed at least 11 young girls.
Oh, yeah.
William Reese is thought to have murdered at least 4 young women, girls. The timelines work out, and I think that's the reason why people think there's a possibility there. But again, the distance, it's 4 hours. That's not, you know, out of the realm of possibility. But these are men that are thought to have picked their prey,
right,
for lack of a better word, in Texas.
Let's say we're in Shreveport for some reason, you know, business, whatever. Like you said, it's unlikely they would put themselves at risk trying that outside of their comfort zone.
But again, it's, you just have all these theories pop up, and a lot of the theories are going to center around well-known killers because of timing and somewhat geography. So you're going to have that.
Yeah. And when it gives you a name instantly.
Yeah. You get name recognition from talking about Henry Lee Lucas.
Sure.
And people latch on to that. Now, is it likely that any of these more well-known serial killers killed Carol Ann Cole? I doubt it.
I think you circle back to the very first suspect that we talked about.
Absolutely. I mean, if I had to put money on it, which I wouldn't, I'm not a gambler.
Right.
But I don't think there's any better suspect than John Chesson. I mean, everything seems to line up.
Yeah.
When you have a person's own daughter, flesh and blood, saying, I believe it was my dad, and here's why. I mean, it's not just a wild theory. She believes she was at the house. She remembers what this girl was wearing. Yep. It matches. He happens to lead them on a hunting trip that he had never taken them on before.
It's all very suspicious.
It is. It is. But it doesn't prove anything. It doesn't prove he's a killer. But again, if I had to make a bet, if I had to put money on the line,
right,
I would lean towards John Chesson.
As would I.
And I think that's why we say in the beginning, you know, it's unsolved. The murder of Carol Ann Cole is unsolved, but it's about as close to a solved case as you can get without technically being solved.
And I guess if it gives you any comfort, we think it's probably him. He's in prison. Doubt he's going to get out anytime soon. So we have a little bit of comfort.
Well, comfort in the fact that he's not going to be able to perpetrate this same type of murder against another young girl.
Yes,
I get that. But that's it. That's the unsolved murder of Carol Ann Cole. There was a lot of people, Gibbs, that I think put a tremendous amount of hard work into this case.
Oh, absolutely.
From, you know, the cold case detectives, we talked about Shannon Mack, to the 911 operator.
Yeah.
And then you have Carol's sister and her friend. They worked tirelessly. And ultimately, were the reason that this 911 operator was able to, you know, make the connection between the real picture and the digital rendering.
Well, you're right. Because if the detective didn't put out the new picture on the Facebook page, and if Patty didn't put out the picture on Craigslist, well, then Linda, the 911 operator, would never have seen both of those. And like you said, she was able to determine they were the same person by the nostrils and things like that. We would still be sitting here with an unsolved case, an unsolved missing person.
Yeah, that's a good point. Not just an unsolved case, an unsolved missing persons case, because we still wouldn't know who it was.
Right.
But when you look at it, there was a lot of things that had to happen, that had to fall into place for Bossier Doe to be identified as Carol Ann Cole.
Yeah.
But once she was, then you look at it and you say, okay, her family waited a long time.
Right.
But they got her back. They were able to bury her back home with them. The only thing we don't have in this case, technically, is justice.
Right.
Nobody, you know, is paying for the crime. I take comfort, like you said, in the fact that the person that is most likely believed to have been the killer is in prison and probably will never get out.
Yeah.
We got some voicemails, Gibbs. You want to check those out?
Let's hear them.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Gibby. This is Britt calling from Warsaw, Kentucky. I am listening to the Nikki Forrest case, and I just want to throw this out there. I'm not so sure the blue sedan exists. Isn't it entirely possible that the boyfriend did something to her and completely made up the fact that she left in another vehicle? Anyway, I love you guys. You're awesome. I listen to you all the time, all the shows, True Crime All the Time, Unsolved, Criminology, the reviews are in, Quadruple Threat. Anyway, thanks so much. Keep doing what you're doing, and keep your own time chicken. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I definitely think that's a possibility.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, you know, when a person says what they say, and it's not verifiable.
Right. And there's no way to verify that.
No. That's what not verifiable means. Yeah. But, you know, all you can do is go on what that person says. It doesn't mean it happened. It means that that's the way they say it happened.
Yeah. And hopefully the Troy police looked into that, you know, as deep as they could. So
Hey guys, I'm listening to the Austin Axe murders right now, and you mentioned the whole pecan word, and I've got something that my dad used to tell me. Pecan is a nut. A pecan is something you leave in the backseat of your pickup truck on long road trips. So anyway, that's, you know, a little bit of intuitiveness for you. Love the podcast. Love what you guys do. Keep up the good work. Keep your own time ticking. I'm team both of you. You both do an amazing job. Both make me laugh on the long road trips I do for work. So keep it going, guys. Thanks.
All right. Love it. I actually think that's awesome because it's easy to remember.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't mean that a lot of people don't say pecan pie, because a lot of people do.
Sure.
I say pecan, and I always have. Doesn't mean it's right or wrong, but.
Well, grab yourself some pecan and.
Go to town.
Go to town.
I'm sure I'll have some, or I will have already had some at Thanksgiving dinner by the time this episode comes out.
That's true. That's exactly true.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Gibby. This is Amanda from Lebanon. I was just calling to say I enjoy your podcast a lot, and I appreciate all the hard work you guys do. You help get me through my long 10-hour shifts. I'm an x-ray tech, and I x-ray titanium casting, so it's kind of boring, and you guys help break up the monotony of it. Anyways, I'm Team TCAT, and thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah. She from Lebanon, Ohio?
Yep.
I'm assuming.
I'm assuming, too.
Judging by the accent.
Yeah.
That's very close. Literally right down the road.
Could be related.
Just because somebody's close doesn't mean, hey, we're not, it's not that backwater here, man. Doesn't mean we're all related.
Hey, it's Rachel from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I just listened to the Rafay murder, and then I watched the documentary on Netflix, and now I'm just like so confused if they did it or not. I'm wondering if you watched the documentary, because you guys are super convinced that they're guilty, and then you watch the documentary and you see kind of a lot of the evidence you said in a different way. So I just want to see if you saw it, and if you did, what did you think about it? Did you kind of change your opinion, or did you do so much research that you already have your opinion? So have a great day. Love you both. Bye.
Now, I'll be honest, Gibbs. I watched the documentary. The problem is we did that episode quite a long time ago.
We did.
So I don't remember the order. I think I'd already seen the documentary by the time that we did the episode, but I cannot remember for sure. And I don't remember everything we said. Obviously, she's saying we sounded pretty convinced in the guilt. What I will say is this. I watch a lot of the true crime documentaries on Netflix and Hulu and different places. They are all told or all done from a very specific point of view. I mean, you can look at them all from making a murderer to this one to that one. It depends on who they have the access to as to what point of view they're kind of going from. So it's kind of hard for me to talk about it, 'cause I just don't remember. It's been so long ago.
Yeah.
Of why we sounded so convinced, but obviously it was because of the research.
Well,
sure. It wouldn't have been because of the documentary.
Right.
And if I watched the documentary before we did the episode, which I believe I did, then that means it didn't change my mind. I'll say that.
I'll agree with that.
I'm glad you did.
Yeah.
All right, buddy, let's get out of here. That is it for another episode of True Crime All the Time Unsolved. So for Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking.